I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Andrew Manzi, who is here with the Boston Symphony for the very first time, violinist and conductor. It's so great to have you. Thanks for a little bit of your time today.
Thank you. It's a really exciting thing for me to be here this week.
Well, this is a really terrific program of pieces that are familiar and a little bit that's not. So let's talk first about Grazina Batsevich and this piece that the BSO is playing her music for the very first time. It's never happened here before. This piece is just rip-roaring fun. But tell me, was it your request or was it the BSO that suggested this piece?
When we came to the conclusion, a Mozart concerto, which is not, you could say, not daring planning, a Mendelssohn symphony, which is beautiful, I thought, let's do something a bit more spicy. And I've been listening to the BSO's Shostakovich cycle that's been coming out, and I thought this piece would suit them perfectly. This Batsevich concerto, I first heard it when I was 14 years old, I think, and it knocked me out. And I've remembered it ever since, and I do it sometimes.
So tell me about what this particular piece, the Concerto for Strings, says about Batsevich. She's a violinist, a Polish violinist. In fact, I overheard you say that when you get the parts, this is one of those composers, you know exactly what she wants. She writes in the bowings and everything. But what does this particular piece say about her, and why was it your choice to use this as sort of the representative of the first music that we'll hear from the BSO by her?
I think this is a great piece to be introduced to a new composer. She has a tough character. You know, there are three movements, and the first and the last are virtuosic and loud and almost aggressive at times. And then the middle movement is so beautiful. It covers such a range of emotion in about 15 minutes that I think this really sums her up very well. She was an excellent violinist. She was the concert mistress, I should say, of the Polish Radio Orchestra, a very fine player, but she knew exactly how to get effects out of stringed instruments, and I think this piece does it beautifully well.
You mentioned that your inclination came from hearing some of the Shostakovich recordings that Andras and the orchestra have done. I can't help but ask, what is it that you heard in those that made you feel like Batsevich would be just right?
The BSO has that ability to play ruthlessly. What I mean is, there's a lot of emotion in there, there's a lot of expression, but there can also be cold ruthlessness. And that's quite unusual in a great orchestra. They're often looking for beauty and warmth. The BSO has such a range, and that's why I thought this piece needs everything from the softest, warmest heart to a punch in the face. And I think this orchestra can do it.
That's a great way to put it. And you're right, those Shostakovich recordings are that way, and this piece will draw the best out of that. The piano concerto, the 19th piano concerto by Mozart, and our solo is Francesco Piemontosi. I'm interested in your work with him, because you've worked with him a lot, including this particular concerto. You've released a recording with him recently of Mozart concertos. Tell me about the qualities of his playing that really attract you and why your collaboration seems to work so well.
Francesco, he's a lovely pianist, as everyone will hear. He's wonderful with Mozart, but the strange thing is, I used to play Mozart on my historical violin. We do it in a completely different way, but he does it. It's so convincing and beautiful that he wins me over every time. I'm in tears usually. He also has a sense of fun. I've worked a lot with him, and when this concerto we play in our concert we both realized it was our favorite. We were talking about, aren't all the Mozart concertos wonderful? Yes, but there's one of them I really love, and it was the same one. So we thought, when we come to Boston, we've got to do this one.
That's a nice moment, the person you're working with, to find that out. But it's not one of the more commonly done concertos. So what makes it your favorite?
You know, we did it the other day, and some people said, oh, this isn't by Mozart, is it? You're joking. You know, they hadn't heard of it. It's gorgeous. The melody at the beginning, bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum, but very simple, very, you could say, very Mozartian, of course. His favorite rhythm that he used in so many pieces. The second movement is this lovely rocking lullaby-type piece with the most lovely canon, where the musicians are sharing a melody one by one in a row, in a chain. And then the last movement's just pure fun with a bit of a joke fugue. It becomes a bit academic and serious, but of course his tongue is firmly in his cheek. I just think this concerto's got everything. Great melodies, great harmonies, and it's Mozart. What more can you want?
That's terrific. Mendelssohn is a composer that, no doubt you've spent a lot of time with Mendelssohn over the years, but with the NDR Radio Philharmonic, yeah, your orchestra in Europe, you recorded recently all the Mendelssohn symphonies, sort of one of those concentrated projects, it looks like, from the outside. I always feel like when those projects happen, I'm always interested in How did it change your perception of Mendelssohn? What did you learn about Mendelssohn by spending that much concentrated time with his symphonies?
I must confess that when I first started doing Mendelssohn, I approached him as not being my favorite composer, and I left him thinking, yeah, he's an absolute genius. And I read a lot about him, which really helped me. For example, did you know he was quite good at gymnastics? He was very good on, he was a multi-talented guy. He could write poetry, paint beautiful pictures. He would translate things into Latin, and he read Greek, ancient Greek. He did all sorts of things. And he probably would have played football, soccer for Germany, you know. He was one of these hugely talented people. Could be a bit fussy, could be a bit prickly because he was a perfectionist. But I got really drawn into the way his music, sometimes despite himself, goes so deep and is so touching that he'll be writing something and it's almost as if the music takes him to a place where he perhaps didn't ever intend to go. And this Reformation Symphony has a few moments like that of just utter beauty that go beyond words.
And you're using a Christopher Hogwood edition of the Reformation Symphony. What do we get from this symphony? What meaning? Is it a curiosity or is it an improvement? Or what your choice for this particular edition comes down to what?
We are doing the so-called first version, which means how he originally wrote it. When he later then took some parts out. We've put those little bits in. Most of them are very small. But one is a 2 or 3 minute section for the flute and the woodwinds to do this beautiful sort of recitative preparation for the finale. And I love this bit. But he maybe took it out because he was very unsure of the whole symphony. I think he only performed it once and then withdrew it. And because of the Reformation link, the Martin Luther thing, he maybe felt that was too programmatic, that bit. The idea of Martin Luther sitting there playing his flute and inventing a new melody. So he took it out. But I think it's absolutely lovely music, and I think the symphony gains from it. Plus, we have the most gorgeous woodwind section in the world with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. So it's a real pleasure to do the symphony with them.
It's interesting to hear you talk about why he might have done that, because I hear what you mean, that the programmatic aspect may have kind of made him shy away from it. But he certainly, you know, the other example from his music that so many people will recognize is the way he handled his violin concerto and the transitions of that piece. And this reminds me of that.
He was a great reviser. He couldn't leave anything alone. The Italian symphony he wrote, and that's the version we normally hear, and then he set about revising it. And I'm sorry, Felix, but it's not an improvement what you did. So we all play the original. He's just one of those, he's fussy even with his own work. It's a shame, but also we think of him now. There are 5 symphonies, and of course there are however many string symphonies also. But he didn't think of himself as a symphonist at all. He withdrew most of his symphonies. He probably thought of himself as a choral man and chamber music and songs without words. So we tend to have a different view of him today as the view he had of himself.
Fascinating. I got to know your work through your work in early music, through the Academy of Ancient Music, through your violin work, and it's all stunning. But at some point, you made a transition in a way. I know you probably haven't left behind early music completely, but you have embraced modern orchestras and work with them all the time now. I'm not sure quite how to ask it. So I'll just sort of say, if I were a conductor who kind of worked in the historically informed area where the equipment is totally different and there's a whole different set of priorities, how would you suggest that I make a transition to conducting major orchestras with modern instruments?
Yeah, my career, for whatever, it's a grand word for little thing going on here over here, is that I was a violinist and I was leading orchestras and directing them from the violin. And then as the repertoire got later, it becomes impossible to direct it from the violin. So I sort of evolved into being a conductor. I have to say, what people don't know is I always did a little bit of conducting along the way, and that the early music thing for me caught me by surprise. I met some other musicians, Richard Egar, Edgar was a colleague of many years. They drew me into Baroque music, which I wasn't really thinking about at all. I was more interested in contemporary music at that time. So for me, the early music thing was a little bit, I'm very happy I did it, but it took me by surprise, and I'm now still using the skills and the questions we asked in the early music are exactly the same ones I ask when I do Batsevich or Mendelssohn or Mozart. They're the same questions. What is the composer wanting us to experience? What are they trying to help us to do in writing these funny marks on a piece of paper and looking at all the information around to try to make a great performance for today? That's what it's all about, really. So I see my career as an unbroken line, but I do understand that people perhaps are a bit surprised. Hang on, wasn't he a Baroque violinist? Well, yes, I was, but I wasn't just a Baroque violinist. I hope I was a musician all along, and I still am.
Sure, that's absolutely true. And I'm so happy that our good friend Richard Egar played a role in all of that. He's a visitor to Boston frequently, and we love him here too. So, Andrew Manzi, it's great to talk with you. Welcome to Boston. It's so good to have you here, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.